And tonight, Parliament is set for a showdown over two persons nominated by President Akufo-Addo to the Supreme Court. With Joy News learning, the NDC MPs on the Appointments Committee have voted unanimously to reject their nomination. Now, it follows a chaotic vetting of the nominees yesterday. All seven NDC MPs on the Appointments Committee voted against approving Professor Richard Frimpon and Justice Rosetta Essa, while the NPP MPs present voted to approve the nominees. This means the committee cannot make a recommendation on whether to approve or reject the nominees, and the plenary itself will have to take that decision. On Tuesday, even before the substantive vetting, the NDC raised an objection, insisting the president was acting unconstitutionally with the mode of appointment. Listen to Mahama Yariga raising the issues just before the committee started its work.
That even if you are adding one to the 10, is that okay? It should be backed by law, either a constitutional instrument or an act of parliament. That is all that I have said. And as for when it suits, it has never suited me to obstruct somebody from becoming a Supreme Court judge. Is that okay? But our duty here as gatekeepers of our constitution is to do our job without fear or favor. There are people that have been presented here that I like. I've read their writings, I've read their judgments. I mean, I know their family members. Some of them went to school with schools that I went to, and I know that by virtue of the schools they went to, they are competent and etc. But because I went to those same schools, I also know that I have a duty to my constitution and I must interpret it properly. And if anybody is a president and I'm to guide that person, I will show the person how to do the work properly. So please, we are not here doing partisan work. I said every president that I have known since the number was increased beyond 10 has violated this, and we parliamentarians have condoned it by allowing it to pass without ever questioning it.
Take you to Parliament now. I want to bring in my parliamentary correspondent Kweku Asante, who's been following this for us and gathering a bit more intelligence around the voting that went on and what really this will mean for the two nominees. And Kweku, how exactly did the majority side respond to these claims by the minority? Well, we just heard there from Mama Yariga, which really has set the tone for the voting that we've seen now, leaving the two sides split in the middle.
Well, Evans, as will be expected, the majority did come in forcefully. We did hear from Frank Onodompere, Majority Chief Whip, a member of the committee, Mr. Abdallah, the ranking on the Judiciary Committee. They were forceful in the opinion that the points that have been raised by the minority through Mahama Yariga were simply baseless. But then we heard from the Vice Chair of the committee, who did make a substantive ruling on the preliminary objection, ruling that the claims made by Mahama Yariga and the NDC were completely meritless.
The chair should overrule the preliminary objection with reasoned arguments and proceed with the vetting process, ensuring Parliament's constitutional duties are fulfilled without undue interference. In any event, the respected Boko Central MP did not initially move a motion. He raised an issue, asking that it be captured in the report of the House for subsequent consideration. Thus, he cannot subsequently seek to transform his preliminary observation into a motion demanding a vote at the committee level. If members want to move a competent motion, there are proper and competent ways of doing that. In any event, no rule relied upon to argue the supposed motion by the honorable member. If he still feels so strongly about this right The right forum will be the plenary. This committee has no power to entertain a motion aimed at stopping proceedings. For emphasis, I rule that preliminary objection is hereby dismissed, as same is without merit. Thank you very much.
And Kweku, we then heard that this ruling may have been plagiarized.
Yes, that is the allegation that the minority did make at the committee level. In fact, prior to this, the tension at the committee were going through the roof. And when this ruling was read, things started degenerating. Just about 5 minutes after, the minority chief whip, Kwame Govan Sagboja, held in his hands some documents he said he had seen on Facebook. And mind you, this particular ruling from Madame Patricia Piaget, the vice chair of the committee, was read just around 1 o'clock p.m. And at that particular point, a Facebook post with the same content belonging to a popular Facebook journalist, Richard Delascar of CTFM, had the same content and was on his Facebook page. In fact, there were parts of Richard Delascar's post that said the chairman should make a ruling, and Madame Patricia Piaget did seem to be reading the same thing. And according to the minority, that was plagiarism. Listen to Kwame Govan Sagboja.
To raise a very serious issue, the ruling you read, I just noticed that this ruling was posted on a Facebook page of a known journalist an hour ago. And I can tender this for the sake of the protection of the person. It will be extremely damning that the ruling you have given did not come from you, because you remember I made a comment that within the short period that we left here, you were able to, in fact, you were with us in the room after a point in time. You were able to put together this very comprehensive rule. I can read out what is on the social media page of the journalist if you want me to. Do you want me to read it? This is unacceptable. This is scandalous. Unacceptable. A serious committee of parliament, and you read something to us that is supposed to be coming from you. I feel scandalized.
Until you put the motion to a vote, there will be no vetting. And if you want to disrespect the rules of parliament and members of this committee, well, let's do it. But we are not going to throw the rules of parliament away. There's a motion on the floor. No. And we are going to vote on that motion. No rules.
Doesn't have a right. You bring the petition to order.
And how did the chair respond to this?
Well, the chairman, the vice chair, Patricia Piaget, did not respond specifically to the allegations made against her. She still insisted that the preliminary objection had been actually rejected. And then the vetting had to start. In fact, the minority would not allow that up until some time. The majority leader himself came in, calm tempers, tried to speak to all sides. And he really brought the master stroke to calm things at the committee and get the committee to sit. Then we started hearing from Madame Benascu, a justice of the Court of Appeal, the first nominee to have been heard, who was in fact sitting there for almost 4 hours when the MPs were fighting among themselves over that preliminary objection. She spoke about her judicial philosophy and what she brought to the table.
Now, there were other issues that came up. The committee later vetted Professor Richard from Pontu. He's accused by the NDC of being pro-LGBTQ+, and they insist he must renounce his Canadian citizenship.
Well, yes, it appeared this is something that the NDC had been preparing for. When the first nominee was vetted, a number of the sponsors from the minority side on the LGBTQ were not there. But when it was time to vet Professor Opon, Rossi Nelson, the fellow who came in, armed with a number of documents. And Professor Opon is a renowned academic, had written a number of articles. And he had written an article that the property rights of same-sex marriages contracted outside the country, which are brought into Ghana, must be respected. This is something that the minority objected to, saying it meant if he got onto the Supreme Court and the decision had to be taken on the anti-LGBTQ bill, he, the professor of St. Paul Pond, will side with those seeking to cast the bill into the dustbin.
I want to put it to you that as a sponsor of the bill, the Ghanaian Family Values Bill, I think you will be a danger when you get onto the bench in terms of our anti-LGBT activities.
I think I vehemently reject that view, that if I get to the Supreme Court, I'll be a danger to anything that you're talking about. As I said, I have clearly explained the subject matter that I wrote about. I have indicated the caveats that we put in it, in the paper. I have clearly indicated that if you approve me as a justice of the Supreme Court, my responsibility is to apply the laws of Ghana. And I clearly indicated to you what the law of Ghana is, or once the bill is ascended, what the law of Ghana will be. The responsibility of a judge is to apply the law, not to espouse any views through their judgment. That to me will be wrong, will be totally wrong use of the judicial role. So I think that is where I will stop.
What is the motivation to be a citizen of two countries? Are you not satisfied to be a Ghanaian? Why do you want to take up another citizenship of another country?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I certainly am very happy with my Ghanaian citizenship. I have no problem with that. But usually when you travel and you want very good job opportunities, preference is given to citizens. So for example, in Canada, if you want a really good job, you have to be either a citizen or a permanent resident. And to take advantage of those opportunities, to the extent that you qualify for it, I know a lot of Ghanaians who are also citizens of Canada for that purpose.
So, Kweku, clearly the stage was set for a split decision on this matter, like people voting along partisan lines, and you picked up that information that exactly that's what transpired when it came down to voting at the committee level, whether to approve, get a consensus position on whether or not to recommend to the plenary for these two to be considered and approved by the entire House.
Well, yes, Evans, ordinarily the appointment committee is made up of 15 members, 8 members on the majority side, 8 members on the minority side. But Joseph Osei, who chairs the committee, we understand, has been out of the country for some time now. So it was 7-7 on each side. All 7 NDC MPs voted to reject the 2 nominees, and all 7 NPP MPs voted to approve them, which means it's a split decision. And as far as I can recollect, it's hardly been an appointment committee report where it's a split decision. It's normally either a consensus vote or by majority decision. But because of the absence of Joseph Osei, who in fact the majority insisted that per the standing orders should be allowed to vote via telephone conference, via Zoom or via WhatsApp call, but was rejected. And so at this point, it's going to be a split decision. The decision will now go to the plenary. Members of parliament would have to decide through a secret vote whether Justice Frimpong upon and Justice Professor Frimpong upon, I should say, and Justice Rosetta Isabenasco must head to the Supreme Court or not.
And there have been some reactions from the committee already post this split decision at that level.
Yes, I spoke to Governor Kwame Abuja, the minority chief whip. I spoke to the majority leader as well, and they've been expressing their own different view as to what exactly transpired at the committee, although they all come to the same conclusion that it's a split decision.
7 of our colleagues from my colleagues voted against the nominees, and then 7 of colleagues from the majority side voted for. So it's a draw, 7-7. We take the decision on the floor.
On both nominees?
Yes.
As far as we are concerned, the motion is lost.
Mr. Speaker, you know that a committee meeting will conclude by taking a vote. 7 people from our side voted against them, the nominees. 7 people from the majority voted for it. We take the decision at plenary. It's as simple as that.
The committee normally makes its recommendation. And we know that the 15-member committee, the chair of the committee, for some good reason, is out of the jurisdiction. The NDC minority said they were taking a decision en bloc to be against the nominees. Our side took a decision en bloc to be in support. A committee of parliament ferries its recommendation for plenary to take a decision.
Well, in the last hour, the Attorney General's office, they've been weighing in on this raging controversy. Listen to the Deputy Attorney General, Afetun Ayebua.
It's very clear that under our laws, you can be a dual citizen but still be a justice of the Supreme Court. At the Supreme Court, in April last this year, delivered a judgment to that effect. So the nominee who came yesterday is qualified under our laws, notwithstanding the fact that he holds a Canadian citizenship. But for the judgment in April, he wouldn't have qualified to be a Supreme Court judge in Ghana.
There are still those who hold the view that the Supreme Court actually did this in anticipation of the fact that there may be an appointment of this nature in the near future.
I have no evidence to that effect. It may be by mere coincidence, and people may conjecture, but there's no evidence to that effect. So let's leave it for now.
What do you say to people who say that it will not be fair to make members of the judiciary have dual citizenship to sit at the court, but members of the legislature do not have a similar?
Then we have to look at our laws once again. If as a people we think that judges must also not hold dual citizenship, then the law, you know, there was an existing law, that judgment has struck down that piece of legislation. So if we want to say open it up for all others to come into the fray, let's look at it. That's what I'm concerned. The status quo now is that if you are a dual citizen, you cannot sit in the House of Parliament as an MP. Until that provision is amended or repealed, we should go by that.
And I want to bring in Raina Mahama Yariga, a lawyer, member of parliament, is a member of the appointments committee, and one of those who raised the fundamental issues at the beginning that set the stage for the controversy that we saw play out at the committee level yesterday. Also joining me is Hassan Abdullah Idi, who is a ranking member on the Judiciary Committee, is an MPP MP for Salaga. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time. Mr. Yariga, I believe you're one of the seven NDC MPs who voted to reject the nominations of these two judges, correct?
Yeah, good evening to you, and good evening to your listeners. Yeah, we participated in the vote, and our side voted and blocked against the two nominations.
In your case, why did you vote against them?
Well, what I can tell you is that side took a decision to vote against the nominations. I can assure you that it has nothing to do with the qualification of the individual nominees. We did vet them. We asked them all the questions. They answered. I believe that many of their answers were satisfactory. There were answers that were clearly not satisfactory. But in the end, I think that our side, based on considerations that were very important to us, decided that we will not allow the nominations to go through in terms of our votes. You recall that our leader did raise the issue of the president trying very hard to pack the Supreme Court just at the time when he is exiting office. So we have a strong objection to President Akufo-Addo trying very hard to pack the Supreme Court. And we believe that they have some implications for the administration of justice going into the future at a time when he is not the president. So it was an issue that we had, and we don't believe that at this time Akufo-Addo should be back in the Supreme Court the way that he wants. Whatever we can do to resist him, we'll resist him. Unfortunately, these two people got entangled in that, and we regret that because it has nothing to do with their qualification or eligibility or competence. If you take the case of the lady nominee who has been a court of appeal judge, would have been good to crown her career with Supreme Court appointment. And we believe that future government might look favorably at her.
Including a possible NDC government. You're admitting then that the only reason why you rejected her and the other colleague is purely because of politics, partisan politics.
There's nothing wrong with that. We made it clear from the beginning that Akufo-Addo should be back in the court. And whatever we will do to resist him, that is an important consideration for whether you call that partisan or you call that patriotic duty, where we believe that there should be opportunity for future governments to also fill in vacancies in the court so that there can be a fair balance in the administration of justice at the highest level. I don't know where in the world that it is not a consideration. Go to the U.S. and you see the Democrats and the Republicans fighting over appointments to the Supreme Court. The Republicans and the Democrats will fight.
But as we speak today, though, Ms. Ayerga, do you not agree that there's a need for more judges to the Supreme Court, considering the recent data that the Chief Justice put out, showing us all the constraints and the pressure on the system with the limited number of judges that you currently have there?
Well, that is why I argued in the beginning that we should have a legislation that sets out the upper ceiling. The essence of a legislation is that when you bring a proposal to Parliament regarding the number of judges, you will have to argue before I put your case in a memorandum, and we will argue, and then the data in the statistics of cases, the ratio of citizens to court judges and etc. would have been effectively discussed, and then there can be a national consensus around what number we should have, based on which you can then proceed to fill in the slots. But, as of now, it is one person's word against the other. I can assure you that there are so many considerations. The Indians, like I said yesterday during the voting, have a legislation. They have 33 Supreme Court judges, but that for a population of 1.4 billion people, we have just 33 million people. And the jurisdiction of the Indian Supreme Court is the same as the jurisdiction of the Ghanaian Supreme Court. So all those who keep saying, oh, you can't compare yourself to America where they have only 9 judges because it's not the same jurisdiction. Then as they go to India, the same jurisdiction, 1.4 billion people have only 33 Supreme Court judges, 7 them. So.
Still, Ms. Ayerga, I want to bring in your colleague, Ahasan Abdallah. He's a ranking member on the Judiciary Committee. Ahasan, you've just heard Mama Ayerga make the point about this is purely, yes, he doesn't deny the fact that it's purely on a political partisan basis, but fundamental accusation is that your party, the president, is packing the Supreme Court. Why is that happening? Do you agree that that is something that has been happening over the period? Hello, Hassan Abdullah. Okay, I may have lost him though on the line, but I still have with me Mahama Yariga, who is on with me. Mahama, so this will obviously come to the plenary. It's down to what the plenary does on this matter.
Yeah, precisely. So, like all other appointments, course, as a committee is to make a recommendation, then the plenary will decide. So when we are reconvened as a parliament, I'm sure it will come up and then take a decision as a house.
From your side, you're going to vote en bloc again when it comes to the plenary, rejecting this?
I don't think we have met as a bloc to take a decision yet, but as a committee en bloc, we took a decision, and then we believe that our recommendations will guide our side when it comes to voting. So when the time comes, I'm sure you'll be around, and then you'll see what will happen.
You raised some constitutional issues at the beginning of the vetting yesterday. Are these constitutional issues ones that you still stand by?
Oh, yeah, sure. I definitely stand by them. I think that all presidents, including NDC and NPP presidents in the past, have been doing the wrong thing, basically, which is, you know, arrogating to themselves the power to determine the number of judges that we should have at the apex court. I believe that even if they have the power to decide that, it has to pass through some legislative scrutiny. So they could either come through a constitutional instrument, which will be laid in parliament, and then it will be there for 21 days, and then come into law, into force as law, unless the MPs are opposed, and then they can mobilize two-thirds to reject the increment in the numbers. Or they bring an act of parliament, a bill to parliament, which could pass by a simple majority vote. So whichever way, I believe that that should be the procedure. And it is a procedure that is democratic, because then all sides get to debate the number. When we debate the number and then it has legislative approval, it gets more legitimacy, and then the concern that everybody is expressing about the numbers could be addressed by the fact that the process has been democratic. The process of determining the numbers has been democratic, transparent, and argued publicly, is made, and then supported by the legislature. So I still stand by that. And unfortunately, to tell you the truth, I'm busy with my own parliamentary elections campaign. So otherwise, I would have initiated some litigation around the subject. But for now, I think that yesterday was a very useful forum to bring it up for national discussion. It's been discussed all over the place, and I think that it might give some guidance to presidents in the future in terms of how they will act.
Ms. Aga, thank you very much. Hassan Abdullah Idi, just rejoin me on the line right now. Ms. Idi, do you accept the accusation tonight that the president is simply parking the Supreme Court with these two nominees?
Thank you, my brother. Good evening. Hello, brother. Can you hear me?
I can hear, yes. You accept that accusation that we've just heard there from the NDC?
Okay. Thank you, and good evening to our cherished listeners. First of all, let me say that our current constitutional arrangement does not allow for us to cap the justices to the Supreme Court. If you refer to Articles 130, 131, 132, and 133 of our Constitution, they collectively exert more effort and a wider jurisdiction on the Supreme Court of Ghana. So if you want to compare the jurisdiction of our Supreme Court to other jurisdictions, let's limit ourselves to that of the UK and then the US, where our democracy is a hybridized one from these two jurisdictions. America has 9 justices to the Supreme Court. The jurisdiction of the Supreme Court of America is very narrow, to the extent that they have what they call the judicial conference. Annually, what they do is that they have the conference that they sit around to, as it were, look at all cases petitioned before them. They have the luxury to choose what case they would hear. Ghana Supreme Court, we don't have that luxury. And in America, once you are a judge to the Supreme Court, you don't retire until you die. There are few conditions under which you cease to be a judge. Ghana, we don't have that luxury. If you look at Article 146 of the Constitution, Supreme Court judges or justices will retire at age 70. We don't have that in other jurisdictions. And that is why every now and then our Supreme Court is depleted. We need to refill it.
Yeah, I mean,
Honorable Ayaga made some profound...
He raised those issues, unfortunately, because of time. But I must ask you, though, briefly. Now, it's come down to a vote, and from what we had there earlier at the committee level, there's a split there, and the decision is currently both sides taking an entrenched position, either you're rejecting all accepting. It will have implications for when it comes to the plenary. How do you plan to proceed as far as this matter is concerned to have these two nominees either considered in some way to meet the expectations the way the president brought them for consideration to parliament?
So first of all, the committee